What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Sahil Sehgal Show, where we interview some unstoppable entrepreneurs who are dominating figures in their businesses. Sahil here, back again with an awesome, insane guest. We are going to interview Lauren Tickner on our show today. She's the founder and CEO of Impact School. She has become a millionaire at the age of 23 and has spoken on the same stages as Alex Hormozi, Gary Vee, etc. Some know her because of her large podcast, Impact School, where she's interviewed the likes of Grant Cardone. She made her first million through building a highly engaged audience on social media and using that audience to launch a highly profitable online health coaching platform, StrengthFeed. After helping a few of her friends do the same, she realized there was a huge opportunity in making monetizing social media her business focus. We're going to be talking about how the Impact School was born and how she has helped more than 1,200 business owners implement social media sales systems to enroll more premium clients organically. What's up, everyone? This is Sahil here, and welcome to the Sahil Sehgal Show, where I'm going to be interviewing some crazy entrepreneurs out there who started from scratch with no experience, resources, and connections, and then later on became unstoppable and dominating figures in their respective businesses. We're going to dive deep into the mindset of these super successful entrepreneurs to find out how they did it and how you can model it too. It's time to pick their brains and uncover all the strategies and tactics which these entrepreneurs use to scale their businesses from nowhere to multiple six, seven, and eight figures. Welcome to the Sahil Sehgal Show. Without any further ado, let's welcome Lauren Tickner to our show today.
Hello. Yes, Sahil. Thanks for having me. Wow, you've had some great guests on your show. I was just that was a very cool intro that you've got there. I like it.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much. And Lauren, I've been consuming your content. We were talking backstage. I want to applaud you for that insanely valuable content that you're putting on social media. And I have been consuming it for the past 2 or 3 weeks and got amazed by the simplicity of it first. And every piece of content was feeling like it is speaking to me directly. So thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I love making content, and that's one of the reasons why I like to go on other people's shows as well, because you get to firstly connect with cool entrepreneurs, and secondly, it's just a great way to put some more value out there. So yeah, this absolutely should be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did this all started for you, for the people who are living under the rock, don't know about your story?
Yeah, so essentially my background was in fitness, and so I never intended to be an entrepreneur. So I was working in this corporate job, and I just remember being so miserable all the time. And it was quite a simple dream that I had in the beginning, because there was like a gym opposite my office, and I was on like the 20th floor or something, and I could always look down and see people just going into the gym all day, every day. And my dream at that time was literally just to be able to train whenever I wanted to. Like, it was the most simplest dream ever. And yeah, so that's kind of how I began. And I had a fitness Instagram account at the time. And so I was always really, really into social media, but I didn't think that there was any way to make a business out of it, because that was before that anyone was, you know, trying to post content to make sales. A few people were using it to post their lifestyle and to share tips, but it wasn't like what it is today at all. And so I basically started selling online fitness coaching, and then moved into selling ebooks, info products, personal branding programs and courses, had a lead generation agency, and then decided to form it all together into what now is Impact School. I don't do the B2C stuff anymore. We only work with entrepreneurs. And yeah, that's how we got here.
Oh, that looks like a journey that you have been going through. So when did exactly it started? Which year was it?
It was about like, I don't know what year. Yeah, sorry. I don't know the year. Yeah, like 8 years.
8 years. Oh, wow. That's cool.
I don't do live maths, right? Because like, I'll just mess it up. So it's better if I just don't know.
That's fine. That's cool. No, your content is amazing. It's already... So I want to know that part of that. Curious to know about how did it transition into... So you started into the fitness and into the high ticket model. That's what your content is all talking about. So I want to know about that part. How did it all go?
Yeah. So just to confirm, what's your question exactly?
So when you were starting as a fitness coaching, how did it transition into the high ticket model? Because I saw your content, you're talking about closing high ticket deals and DMs as well. So I'm interested to know that part of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I just didn't know in the beginning. I just thought, well, if someone's going to hire a personal trainer, they're going to pay like £100 a session. Okay, they want to go four times a week. And I just ran the numbers and I did, okay, well, if if I'm helping them online, that's even better than doing personal training because I'll help them with the nutrition as well. So I thought, well, if I basically take how much they would charge for all of that in person, and if I make it a little bit less, then I can sell packages for like 3K, 3 to 4K. And because I was helping younger girls, I was selling to their parents. So I essentially had to learn how to sell to their parents so that then I was actually able to, close the deals. So I honestly didn't, I don't think there was even the word, the phrase high ticket back then. I actually only first heard that about 4 years ago. I never knew this phrase. So it's just what I was doing because I don't really like the phrase high ticket. I think it has quite a bad connotation, honestly. And I think a lot of people just want to charge high prices just for the sake of making a lot of money. I prefer to think about it as high value and actually creating a transformation in somebody's life. And so I truly believe that money is simply the byproduct of value. So if you're just trying to like sell high ticket because somebody on the internet told you to, I think you're doing it for the wrong reasons. For me, it was always about helping people, and that's why I got started. And then yeah, there was never really any science or intentionality behind it, honestly. Whereas now I love the business model because you can really, really change people's, like when you sell for a high price point, you can genuinely change people's lives and you can actually get them to the outcome because they have skin in the game. And because it's a lot of money, they're, you're able to focus more resources and attention in actually serving them and helping them. And there's much higher profits for the business as well. Right, because if you're selling something, let's say you want to make 100 grand a month and you're selling something for $9 a month as a membership or $9 product, you have to sell to 11,000 people more and more to actually make 100 grand a month. And also the profit margins are going to be lower because obviously, there's just more, the transaction fee percentage is higher, et cetera, et cetera. So I like it, the higher value offerings. Yeah, because there's more margin in that.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that term, high value now. I also call sometimes when I'm doing a sales call, especially, I have changed that word to, instead of saying sales call, I call value call. So that is even more impressive. I don't know your point of view on that, because when you get into this online space, or when you're selling more prizes, sales become a little icky for the people. So how was it for you when you started out? Was it uncomfortable when it?
Well, I think sales is only icky if you don't believe that the thing that you're selling is actually going to help people. Because if you know that the moment in which somebody buys from you, they're going to have their life changed, then you're confident in selling and you have a ton of conviction. And so if ever somebody is really struggling to show up on sales calls, or they get onto a sales call and then they start self-sabotaging, saying all the wrong things, there's usually two or three problems. The first problem is you don't believe in what you do, and that's totally unethical. You shouldn't be selling it. The second thing is that you know that upon point of sale, you have a ton of work to do. And that's often when a founder is running the business, they're doing the sales and the client fulfillment, they self-sabotage sales all the time because it's going to take them even more time to now work with that client. So they secretly, in the back of their mind, when they have sales calls booked on their calendar, hope and pray, oh gosh, I hope this client's not going to show up, or I hope they're going to cancel so that I don't have to take the sales call, saves me time. And then they don't have to also do the client fulfillment. So that's why one of the most important things that we say to all of the members at Impact School is, in the beginning, as soon as you have the revenue in your business, how can we offload a lot of the client fulfillment, especially the client onboarding, over to somebody else and automate a large part of it so that you can confidently start selling more and more? Because if you know in the back of your mind there's going to be a ton of work after the sale, then of course, yeah, you're going to sell less because it's more effort for you, right? So we see this all the time.
Absolutely, absolutely. And when we were talking about this, like, I saw your couple of pieces of content talking about going from 10K months to 100K months and all. So according to you, what things matter when somebody is scaling from six figure to seven figures?
I think it's probably one of the biggest things is that delegating. So, for example, if you're making six figures and even low seven figures, for a short period of time, you can do that by yourself. Like you totally can do it all by yourself, but it won't be sustainable in the seven figure range if you are not willing to hire and bring people onto your team. And I think especially in the earlier stages of business, people want to kind of outsource everything, whereas I believe that at seven figures, you want to actually bring that in-house into quality team members, people who are, based in a similar region to where your clients are, rather than kind of like outsourcing everything, because I think you lose the element of control in your business that you would otherwise have if you were to bring it in-house. And then I think the other thing is, a lot of people who are in the beginning stage of business and don't yet have a $1 million business or just kind of getting there, they probably don't have many like-minded friends. So I think it's really important to find people who actually understand business and to get around those circles. And in the beginning, you can just make friends on social media. I mean, that's what I did. I just leveraged social media. I DM people, comment on their stuff and connect with them that way. Because if you don't have people who understand your goals and all the people that you're always hanging around are, you know, working in a normal job, they're not going to understand you. And then that's going to cause you again to kind of stay stuck where you're at. Because if you don't have people that are operating on your level, then you're not going to be able to grow.
Right. Absolutely.
Or at least it's harder.
Yeah, it's harder. Exactly. I'm at the same similar phase where going from like kind of touching the seven figures now. And that's why I have a follow-up question here. Kind of a little selfish. What are the first systems that you should create to hit their seven figure? If a person is at multiple six figures, take an example, and what are the first systems you would focus on that should be created in order to hit that seven figure mark?
I just think it depends for every business. There's not necessarily like a magic formula, right? Because for example, if you're really, really good at sales, then just keep selling and get yourself out of everything else. If you're really good at lead generation, then build the systems around everything that is not lead generation. So there's no exact answer to that. And that's why whenever, for example, like at Impact School, we don't have a giant program where everyone just gets like group coaching and that's it, because we know that every business is unique. And I would say that's probably one of the biggest things to be aware of, right? Like we always see these ads online, which are like, you need this one thing to do this or this one thing to do that. But that's just essentially most of the time solving for the wrong problem. And usually if you're able to look at all the different areas of your business and pinpoint what is your real problem, then you can systematize in that area and do everything sequentially. But simultaneously, you might not necessarily need systems in other areas. Again, for example, if you're really, really good at sales, maybe you just have a way with words, and that's not something that you even need to systematize right now because it's really, really profitable for your business at this exact moment. And so it just makes sense for you to stay doing that right now, you know? So then it's like, okay, well, if this is what you're really good at and you make a lot of money from doing it, then in that case, then I need to systematize all the things up until the point in which somebody gets on a sales call with me so I can have more of those sales calls to make more money. And then I need to systematize everything after the sales call so that I can just get on that call, close the deal, and then I know that that client's going to get taken care of.
Oh, you made it so simple. I really love that part. And when we were talking about this impact school that you created, how was that? What's the story behind it? I'm more interested. And who you are basically helping people inside that? If you want to touch base on that.
Yeah, so I never intended to do what we do now, but I shifted to a point where I was doing a lot of like brand deals on social media. And so me and loads of my friends were working with this one fitness company. And then basically that company dropped all of us and stopped working with us and cut our contracts, right? So we were making a ton of money and then they stopped. And then basically like I was in Bali or something and my friends were saying to me, Lauren, how are you still traveling and making all this money when you don't get paid from the company anymore? I was like, what do you mean? Why do you need to get paid from the company? And they were like, well, that's how we were making money. I was like, well, what? Like, I'm doing fitness coaching. So I basically started showing people for free for like 2 or 3 years. And I never intended for it to be a business from what we do now. But essentially with our social media sales systems that we support our members and our clients with, it really came down to us trying and testing that in fitness. And then I use the same system to sell personal branding courses. And then also for the lead generation agency. So we tried it in business to consumer, business to entrepreneur, and then business to business. And then with some of our lead gen clients, we just tried the same system with them and it really, really worked. And so only until, you know, pretty recently, we decided, okay, well, this is what we want to focus on fully because we're really, really good at it and it just makes sense. So yeah, it was kind of just like really 6 years in the making.
Wow, that's great. And then you said in the first couple of years or first 2 or 3 years, it was all about serving people and you just build your audience basically, and then you monetized it later. Was that right?
Yeah, like in the beginning, for sure. I just didn't see it as a business for like the first 4 years, you know?
Wow.
It just wasn't even something that I thought was a business. I was just like obsessed.
It was passion.
With it.
Out of the passion.
No, basically. I was just obsessed, like 100% obsessed.
Right.
Not even passion. That's not the right word. Like just obsession.
Obsession. That's beautiful. Yeah. And you moved to, I think, you moved to Dubai after that, for that, living that tax-free life. I saw that. Are you currently in Dubai?
Yeah, they added a tax now, so I need to reconsider.
Aren't you at currently in Dubai, or you moved to some other country?
Right now I'm traveling.
You're traveling. Cool. Well, I was personally thinking about this, and that's why I brought this question. What's the pros and cons, if you want to list it out, if you can? I don't know.
Well, I mean, literally, I think it was like legit today they added a tax. So, I mean, I need to reconsider.
They did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, so no comment.
No comment. That's fine. That's fine. What's this question coming in? What are the non-negotiables in your business that you consider in life and business?
Yeah, so for me personally, there are a few things that I do that are non-negotiables. So one of my non-negotiables is taking a walk every day. So I like to try and do 15,000 steps a day. So usually while I'm doing that, I'll take a phone call. I'll do some sales. I'll not sales calls, but like DMs, right? Review some stuff from my team, Slack, ClickUp, reviewing all that stuff, or listening to an audiobook. But I tend to prefer to do more active stuff while I'm walking because I find it helps me focus, because otherwise I can find those tasks a bit boring, and so I like doing it while I'm walking outside. The other thing is training in the gym. So I train in the gym like 5 or 6 days a week,
Oh, well.
and then if on the day that I don't train, I take an extra long walk. But I think the thing with non-negotiables is that they change over the different seasons. So for example, I used to do self-hypnosis every day for like 3 years, whereas I stopped doing that because I found that the incremental effects were no longer that beneficial. And so then now, right now, something that I'm trying to do most days is breath work. So breathing exercises.
I'm doing the same.
And some other things, like one non-negotiable that I do every single day is I have a list of leads that I hit up every day. Like it's still now, I still do this every single day. There's like 70 people on that list. Every
Wow.
day I hit them up.
Do you do that by yourself, or you have setters and all doing it?
Of course, I have a sales team, but I do this part by myself. These are my leads.
Oh, love it.
They
I
have
love
their
this
own list.
organic game. What's that?
I
They
hit
have their
them
own
twice
list?
a day. I hit it twice a day, morning and night. Takes me like 20 minutes each time.
That's impressive. Are you using more of voice note things or video messages?
Yeah, normally voice memos or just like sending a quick like one-liner message.
Yeah. That's how we introduced the new video things, video messages. It's working really great. People are who were ghosting us, getting the replies from these people. That's
Nice.
working great. Yeah.
I
So in
just say,
the
are you ghosting me? Did I get ghosted?
Yeah, I saw that. You posted about it. That was
Yeah.
cool enough. Yeah. Now, when you're living this digital nomad life, do you call that as, how is it living at making seven figures and beyond? Does it impact operations and all, or is it like you made it settle down with it?
The biggest challenge when you're traveling a lot is like changing time zones. Because let's say I have my calendar optimized to be in Dubai and then I go to America or like South America, it's like a 12 or 10 hour time difference.
Right.
So sometimes if there's team meetings that are happening in like the afternoon in Dubai, that would be like super early in the morning in USA or whatever. So one of the things that I try to do now is not change time zones so much and jump around the different time zones, just because I think when you have a team, it's quite unstable for them, and it doesn't provide a, it causes a lot of chaos in their lives, which is unnecessary when you're moving things around that they've otherwise gotten used to. Simultaneously, like you said about non-negotiables before, so there are various things when I'm like booking a place to stay in different countries, where I'll make sure that like the Wi-Fi is fast and that it's, in a safe area and there's a gym like very, very close by. Because if those things aren't accessible, then it's just going to affect my schedule. Whereas I need those things to absolutely be accessible. And so, yeah, that's very important. But I think at the end of the day, if you have the right operational structure and right operations manager in the business, then it shouldn't actually affect too much. But when I was myself like a very operational business owner, yeah, it caused absolute mayhem, like 100% mayhem. But I don't think that traveling should allow you to stop doing, going to the. It's crazy to me when people travel and they're like, "Oh, I haven't been to the gym because I was traveling." I'm like, "What do you mean you didn't go to the gym because you were traveling? Like, what even excuse is that?" It's just not an excuse. Or it's
Right.
like, oh, well, I haven't done any sales in 2 weeks because I was traveling. I'm like, what are you trying to say right now? You were traveling? You're a business owner. Like, if you're going to take a vacation, take a vacation. But like, just be aware that if you're complaining that your business is failing because you took some time off, then that's your 100% responsibility in not having the right people on your team to take over, you know?
That's so right on. Yeah, I would agree on that part. Absolutely. Any of your favorite productivity hack that you use while managing all this?
I don't believe in productivity hacks. I think the best productivity hack is getting a good night's sleep.
That's a good one. Cool. Oh, that's great. I love that. I love that part. And we are talking about this operations and data. So I have this question. If the person is not that data driven, like don't like KPIs, spreadsheets, that's kind of me most of the time. We can't neglect it, obviously, when you reach a certain level. What would you recommend to that person? How do they still handle it? Would you recommend just outsourcing or some other areas?
No, don't outsource. But like, I don't look at KPIs or spreadsheets ever.
Did you start loving that with the time, with the more you were getting into it?
Did I start what?
So did you start loving that thing more? Did you say that you were not loving it initially?
I don't know. I mean, every day we have a call with my team and they report numbers, the numbers that I need, that I told them I need to hear every day. So they'll say the number of sales calls booked, they'll say the number of this, that, and then that's all I need, right? I don't need the rest.
Yeah.
Because I have an operations manager, right? And data people on my team.
Not you. Yeah, my question was along those lines that when a person is doing everything by themselves, but they don't love it, at the same time they can't neglect it. Obviously, it's important. So how they can outsourcing is the solution, like finding people who have already done it a lot, hire operational managers like you, or
Right, I see your question now. Yeah, like I think the one thing I need to get at is like there's a huge difference between outsourcing and hiring. So outsourcing is like finding another company or freelancers to give something over to, whereas hiring someone is bringing them into your company and delegating it to them. It's a massive difference, okay? I will not outsource the majority of stuff in my business. I will bring it in-house. Or I will outsource it, but I'll tell the agency in the very beginning, I'm outsourcing this to you now. It's going to be maximum 6 to 8 months, and then I'm going to bring this in-house. Okay, so there's a huge difference. Something like numbers and like knowing how many sales you're making on a daily basis and tracking your money that came in that day and the money that went out that day, it is crazy to me if a business owner doesn't do that. Like it is literally wild because if you want to make more money, you have to keep cash top of mind, right? And so it's like, I'm just like to these people who kind of say that they have these goals, but then they act totally not in alignment to that. I'm like, what do you really want? You know what I mean? Like, you have to take responsibility when you're a business owner, especially if you have people whose salaries you're paying for. It's totally unfair on them if you're not willing to actually do a little bit of effort, even if you hate it. It's like, why do you train in the gym? Like, I don't really love training in the gym. But I do it because you have to. You need to be healthy, right? Same thing with your business. Like, how can you make sure that your business is healthy? You need to make money. So if you're not making money, it's your responsibility as the business owner to bring the cash.
Yes, absolutely. I love that part, outsourcing versus hiring. I'm going to start teaching that part. It's beautiful. I was having this, you made it clear in the mind. That's amazing. Beautiful, all that. Thank you so much, Lauren. If people want to get some more details about you, where they can find your social media handles, what's the best place? Facebook, Instagram, or some other website you want to drive those people to?
Yeah, every platform is good. Learn technology. Just go to impactschoolmethod.com. There's a free training there about the social media sales system that we use every single year to make millions organically. So that's just impactschoolmethod.com. And if you like podcasts, then we have the Impact School podcast, which is obviously available on all podcast providers as well. So yeah, you can find some more stuff there.
Absolutely. I'm going to be dropping that links, all these links on the show notes down there, people who are watching or listening us. So we'll be coming up with another episode very soon. Till then, stay tuned. We'll be catching up very, very soon with another episode. Take care. Bye, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And if you have enjoyed this episode, make sure to visit dreamclientsecrets.com to get more information about how you can grow and scale your online business. And if you love this show, don't forget to leave me a 5-star review, and I will see you in the next episode.